All right, so we'll say good morning. Samechei. So let's begin. Tap of Samechei Amud Aleph. Ubimoch Sheba Ozna. So if you remember again, actually a very interesting and exciting sugya today. So the Mishnah said that a woman is permitted to go ahead, or not just a woman, a person is permitted to go ahead and go out. Moch is a wad of cotton in one's ear. Tani Rami Bar Yecheskel, v'hu shekasher ba'azna. Rami Bar Yecheskel said, but that's only true if it's tied to the ear. Because only if it's tied to the ear is there not a fear that it will come out. Ubimoch Sheba Sandala, and with the wad of cotton in her shoe, again, Rabbi Bar Yecheskel says it has to be tied to the shoe. The idea over here is that it's not just enough for it to be in there. It has to be attached in a way that there's no concern that it's going to fall out and you may come to carry it. Now we get into an interesting sugya. And what about the moch? What about the cotton that she uses during her menstrual cycle? So moch sheheskinu lo lenidasa. Sava Rami Bar Yeches, Sama Rami Bar Chama leMeimar, v'hu shekshura leBein Yirako Seha. So Rami Bar Chama wanted to say that same thing, that maybe she could only go out with essentially this pad, right, at a time when it's tied to her person. It has to be tied to her body, so that there's no concern that she'll come to carry it. Amar Rava, Rava says no. Afa pi yishenu kasher la, doesn't have to be tied to her. Why? Kevan demois. Lo asya la asuye, because they both say, unlike the wad of cotton in her ear or the wad of cotton in her shoe, which if it falls out, she'll go ahead and carry it. A woman is not going to take out the pad that she's using for her menstrual cycle. But she's not going to take it out. I mean, she's not going to take it out in Rosh HaRabim and go end up carrying it. So therefore, again, Rava says it need not be attached to her body. So Rabbi Yirmiyahu bar Rabbi Abba asked the following question. Asisa la beis yad. What happens if she literally had like a handle for this pad for her cycle? So the Gemara says, Amar lei mutter. So the concern of Rabbi Abba is the following. The concern of Rabbi Abba, look at Rashi for just a moment. Asisa la beis yad, lemoch sheba osa makom. Let's say she made for herself a handle for the moch, for the wad of cotton that she keeps. But osa makom means for her menstrual cycle. Mahu lemesre dilma shakla umematala biyadaim dilo ma'is laochza beves yad shela. So the question that Rabbi Yirmiyahu is asking for Rabbi Abba is, the assumption until now as to why she's not going to take out this wad of material of cotton is because it's going to be bloody, right? It's going to be disgusting. She's not going to take it out. What happens if it has a handle? Right, meaning it has a place where you can hold the pad that's not sullied. So does that make a difference? So the Gemara says, Amar lei mutter, it's still mutter for her to go out with it. Mutter, Rashi says, Asesola beisyad mutter, telo amrina lo mois, ela afilu beisyad mois. No, even if it is a part of the pad that she could hold onto that is not going to be bloodied, nevertheless, she's not going to handle that outside of her house. It's Maranami Amar Nachman bar Ushia Amar Rabbi Yochanan, asesala beis yad mutter, and therefore again, cause the other opinions that say that even if the pad had some kind of handle that would not become sully, nevertheless she can still go out with it into Rosh Sarabim, even if it's not tied to her body, because there's no concern that she's going to come to carry it in Rosh Sarabim. Rabbi Yochanan nafik behu lebei midrasha. Rabbi Yochanan went out with it to the base medrash. Now, what is the it? Look at Rashi. Rabbi Yochanan nafik behu lebei midrasha. Bimoch sheba ozno shahaya zakin, bahay salot soas ozin meruba. So apparently Rabbi Yochanan, when he got older, had a lot of earwax, so he used to walk around with a piece of cotton in his ear. So the Gemara now relates that Rabbi Yochanan went out from his house to the base medrash, the piece of cotton stuck in his ear, and the piece of cotton was not attached to his body. And what happened? V'chalukin alav chaverov. All of his friends disagreed with him. Right, because remember earlier the Gemara said that the piece of cotton has to be attached to his body. Rabbi Yanai nafik bula karmelis. Rabbi Yanai went out to a karmelis. Again, Rashi points out over here. Rashi points mechalukin alav kol doro, and everyone in his generation disagreed with him. So whether or not Rabbi Yanai went out with something in his ear or something in his shoe, okay. The point is he went out without it being attached. So the Gemara says v'hatani Rabbi Bar Yecheskel. But I don't understand. Rabbi Bar Yecheskel said, but in order to go out with the cotton in your ear or with the cotton in your foot, it has to be tied on. The Gemara says, Lo kashya, it's not a question. Hadimahadik, hadilomahadik. One is talking about a case where it's firmly embedded, and one is where it's not firmly embedded. What does that mean? The Gemara is qualifying the statement now. When do we say it has to be tied onto the body or tied onto the shoe? When the cotton itself is not securely lodged. But if the cotton itself is securely lodged either in the ear or in the shoe, there is no need, and when I say securely means firmly, the hadik, hadik means it's really attached, so then there's no need to tie it on. Look at Rashi. Rashi says those over here. V'hatani Rabbi Ahusha Kasher. Hadimahadik, excuse me. Hadimahadik. The Rabbi Yochanan Hayotochev Ba'ozno Yafe. Umahadik. Rabbi Yochanan used to really push the piece of cotton in his ear very well. Velo baik shira. Udari barichezka, but lo mahadik. So, okay, so the Gemara says, therefore, halacha lemaisa, the Gemara is just qualifying the statement before, and even though Rabbi Bar Yechezkel said before that you have to tie it on, that's only if it's not firmly lodged, either in the shoe or in the body. But if it's firmly lodged in a way, if there's no concern that it's going to fall out, that's enough. Says the Gemara Vayter. The pilpel ubegalgal melach. So the Mishnah said that you can go out, or can go out on Shabbos, pilpel. Pilpel is literally like a peppercorn. Ubegalgal melach. Galgal melach is a lump of salt. So the Gemara says, pilpel l'reach hapeh. People would go with the pilpel for bad breath. Galgal melach l'dorshini. And galgal melach, Rashi says, l'dorshini l'choli hashinaim. A toothache. So since these things are serving a purpose, now obviously it goes without saying that people must have also used these things for other situations as well. Otherwise you get into situations of refuah. But we're not going to get into that sugya now. But the point the Gemara is saying is that since it serves a purpose for you, when you take it out into Rosh Hashanah, that's not called the act of chotzah.
That would include gum?
That would include gum, yeah. Gum is even easier. Gum is a food. So something you could go out with any food in your mouth. You don't have to swallow your food before you go out to Rosh Hashanah. So the Gemara goes back there. But chol davar shenosna l'soch pia. I'm sorry. Pilpel l'reach hapeh. Fine. Chol davar shenosna l'soch pia. Zangvila inami darzuna. So the Gemara says, what does it mean to when a Mishnah says or anything else that she puts into her mouth? So the Gemara says zangvila. Zangvila is ginger. And darzuna, as she says, is kinamon, is cinnamon. So these are things that people, I guess it's the Talmudic precursor to gum or to a sucking candy. These would be things that people would go ahead and keep in their mouth. Shein toteves, shein shalzav. So this is actually interesting. What about a false tooth that's made of gold? False tooth that's made of gold. So Rebbe says we can go out with it on Shabbos. V'chacham osur, nacham say you can't go out with it. So the Gemara says, Amar Rebbe Zeira, lo shanu ela shalzav. This, so the Gemara says, lo shanu ela shalzav. The machlokis between Rebbe and the Chacham is only with a gold tooth. Aval b'shal kesef, divrei hakol mutter. But if the tooth is made of silver, everybody agrees that it's mutter. So what's the pshat? Look at Rashi. So Rashi gives two approaches over here. Aval shal kesef, shedome l'shar hashinayim. It's actually a very interesting statement. Because if you have a silver tooth, it'll look like the rest of your teeth. Now, I don't know what that means about how their teeth looked, right? Maybe what it's saying is, I don't know, but if they're saying, maybe they just had a different hue of silver, I'm not sure. But, okay, possibility one is because if you have a silver tooth, it'll look like the rest of the teeth. The linira, the taima, the shalzab, mishum de chashiva, va asilach vuye lekach aser. Aval shal kesev lo chashiva, va lo asilach vuye. So Rashi says then a second approach, which seems to be more aligned with our sugya, which is that the concern that the chachamim had is that with a gold tooth is chashiv, and a person may come to take that out and show it to their friends. And therefore there's that concern that, remember, with the false teeth that they're talking about are not like firmly embedded. So a person may take it out, show it to their friend, they come to carry it, dalet amos. However, a silver tooth, which is not considered so chashiv, that's not going to happen. Times, therefore, again, even the chachamim who hold that he can't go out with a gold tooth will hold, agree with Rabbi that you can go out with a silver tooth. Tangi na mihaki, a brisa that supports this as well. Bishel kesef divriya kol mutter. When it comes to a silver tooth, everyone agrees that you can go out with it on Shabbos. Shel zohav, Rebbe matir, v'chacham mosrim. When it comes to a gold tooth, Rebbe says it's mutter, chachamim say it's aser. Now, what's Rebbe's logic? So, according to Rebbe, people don't take out their teeth to show to other people. Why? For the simple reason, if you take out your tooth, it highlights the fact that you're missing a tooth, which is something that sometimes a person can be very self-conscious and embarrassed about. So according to Rebbe, anything about which a person is self-conscious about, a person is not going to go out and take out on Shabbos. Amar Abaye, Rebbe v'Rebbe Eliezer, Rebbe Shimon Elazar, kulu svirlu. So Abaye says Rebbe, Rebbe Eliezer, and Rebbe Shimon Elazar all agree to the same premise. D'chol midi d'migne be, lo asi la'achvuye. Anything that is embarrassing to an individual, a person is not going to take it out and show it to their friend. This is the logic. This is the logic of Rebbe. Therefore, according to Rebbe, you could even go out with a gold tooth. You could even go out with a gold tooth because, again, a person is not going to remove their dentures. A person is not going to go ahead and remove their gold tooth, which highlights the fact that they're missing a tooth to show it to their friend. So the Gemara says, Rebbe hada amran. So Rebbe is what we just said before. That's why Rebbe holds that you can even go out with a gold tooth on Shabbos because, again, no concern you're going to take it out and show it to your friends. Rebbe Eliezer. Where do we see Rebbe Eliezer's shita? Desanya. Rebbe Eliezer poter bikoveles ubitzluchis shel plaitin. So what? So we just had this sugya 2-3 days ago. That Rebbe Eliezer holds that a woman could go out with a koveles. A koveles is a spice packet, and tzluchis shel plaitin is a little flask of pilon oil. Now remember again, why was a person wearing these particular items? Because a person had body odor. So according to Rabbi Eliezer, there's no concern that a person's going to go ahead and take this off and show it to their friends. Why? Because again, a person's not going to want to advertise the fact that they have body odor and therefore are wearing, essentially it's like wearing an air freshener around your neck. So a person's not going to take that off and show it to their friend because it highlights their odor issues. Okay, that's Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Shimon Elazar, what about Rabbi Shimon Elazar? This Sanya. Klal, Amar Rabbi Shimon Elazar, Kol Shehu Lemata Min Asofka, Yotzeba, the Yilamala Min Asofka, Eina Yotzeba. Rabbi Shimon Elazar holds, Rabbi, say the following, that any item that is below the Sofka, Sofka is the hat of a woman. Hat of a woman. Anything on a woman's head that's underneath her hat, Sofka, Rashi says, Kigon Kipa Shel Tzemer, was like this woolen cap. Remember, we've already seen that women seem to have worn multiple layers of not multiple layers, but they had like this woolen cap that was kind of like the tichel, and then they often wore something on top of that. So Rabbi Shimon Elazar says like this: anything that's below her woolen cap, yotzebo, she can go out with. So if she has hairpins or anything else that's underneath the cap, she can go out with. Anything that's above the woolen cap, Rabbi Shimon Elazar says she has to be more careful about what she goes out with. Look at Rashi, yotzebo, de lo chayshinan dilma sholfa umachvia de migle sara. So what's the logic? Logic over here is that a woman is not going to remove anything from underneath the safka, underneath the woolen cap. Why? Because in doing so, that's what caused her to expose her hair. And a woman is not going to do that in Rishus HaRabim. Anything that's above the safka she could remove without going ahead and uncovering her hair, that's when there may be a concern. So the point that Abaye is making is Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Shimon Elazar all agree to the same basic premise that halacha l'maisa, if it's something that a person would either be self-conscious about or would feel it's inappropriate to go ahead and show to another, a person could go out with that in Rosh Hashanah on Shabbos because there's no concern that a person will come to carry it. Fine, says the Mishnah. Yotza, very interesting, actually very interesting sugya. They're all interesting sugya. Yotza b'sela shalatzinus. A person could go out on Shabbos with a sela. Sela Rabosai is a coin that's on the tzinus. Now we'll discuss what a tzinus is in the Gemara. Rashi points out over here Mefarish b'Gemara. A person could go out with a sela on a tzinus. Habonos kitanos yotzin b'chutin va'afidu b'kismin sheba azneim. Young girls could go out with the strings, or even kismin literally means splinters of wood that are in their ear. Now look at Rashi for just a moment. We actually saw this. We saw this Gemara, but we saw the Gemara quoted this before. Rashi says, Habanos Kitanos, second white line in Rashi, Sheminachbos Ozneim, because a girl often would pierce her ears. The Ein Osin Nizamim Ad Sheyigdul. It's actually very interesting. So they would pierce the ears of young girls, but interestingly enough, you would not get earrings until you got older. So I guess they would pierce the ears when they were younger. I guess it's easier to deal with the child. He pierced his ear younger, but they wouldn't get earrings until they were older. So he wanted to make sure that the hole didn't close up. So what did they do? They would put threads, or literally pieces of wood, through the ears. Fine. So fine. So girls could go out. Now, banos ketanos refers to young girls. Young girls could go out. The reason it says banos ketanos is because that's who had these strings in their ears. Older women already had what? Already had earrings. So the young girls could go out with the strings or with the little pieces of wood in the ear that prevent the hole from closing up. This is interesting. Aravios yotzos ruulos. So listen, look at Rashi. Aravios, Nashim Yisraelios Sheba'arav. Jewish women who are living in Sheba'arav is Arabia. Arabia. So listen how fascinating this is. Jewish women who are living in Arabia, Yotzos Ru'ulos. What is Ru'ulos? Rashi says, Derech Aravios, Lihios Mu'utafos Roshan Upneim, Chutzmen Ha'inayim. The Arabian women went out, totally, a burqa, totally covered, except for their eyes. Vikari la veloshin Arabi ruulos. Hainu ha ruulos tekshiv gabi takshit inashim sefer Yeshaya. So, what's amazingly enough, the Jewish women who lived in Arabian countries adopted this same mode. That's how women dressed. It didn't matter what. So, the Mishnah is saying over here that although, again, this mode of dress of the burqa is not Jewish per se, but if this is how the women of a particular locale dress, then a woman could go out with that on Shabbos also. And we don't say that all of that additional clothing is called a masui. We don't consider that a burden. Umidios perufos. And the women from Madai, the Median women, could go out prufos. What does that mean? Rashi says, Midios, Nashim Yisraelios Sheba Madai. It's just very interesting, by the way. It's not a topic for today. But the reason why this is fascinating is because this also gets into a very interesting discussion regarding tznius, regarding the fact that often tznius norms are often influenced by the society in which you live in. So it could have been that for a woman in Arabia, tznius norms were one thing. In Madai, they were another thing. In Eretz Yisrael, they were a third thing. Not our topic for today, but it's interesting to think about. So, midios prufos. So what does prufos mean? Rashi says, prufos, sheme'atfos betalis. So the women in Madai would put on a cloak, Vitola haretzua bisvasa achas kineget savara, ubisvasa hashenis, korcha even o egos, vikosheres haretzua bikrach, the in hatalis lofa mealel. So in Madai, the way the women used to wear like their shawls is they put it on them, they would throw one side over their shoulder, and on the other side, what they would do is they would sew, Rashi points out, it's either a button or a nut, or we'll see other things on the other side as like a button, and they would tie the other side of the shawl onto the button to ultimately fasten the shawl around their shoulders that it shouldn't fall off. B'chol Adam. And the truth is, any person could go ahead and go out like this on Shabbos. Ela shedivru chachamim bahove. But rather, again, the chachamim spoke about in accordance with the facts on the ground. Meaning, once these become acceptable modes of dress, even if you live in an area that doesn't have this mode of dress, once it becomes normal, it becomes normal. Now we'll discuss exactly how this plays out. Does this mean that, let's say, a woman in Madai could go out with a burqa, even though women in Madai don't wear burqas, or that a woman in Arabia could go out with this prufos? So that we'll see. So the Gemara goes on. Porefes al ha'even va'al ha'egos va'al ha'matvea. A woman could porefes. Now porefes means you could make a button. Because remember again, the image that the Mishnah is giving us is this shawl. Right? This shawl that's around my shoulders. So now I want to take one end of the shawl and tie it and tie the strap around the button. So the Mishnah now says the following. I just want to see if I skipped that actually. Fine. Porefes ala even vala egos vala matbea. For the button, you could use a stone, you could use a nut, and you could even use a coin. Ubilvan shelo tifrof lechatchila b'Shabbos. As long as what? As long as you don't use it for the first time on Shabbos. Meaning, as long as you have inaugurated these items as a button prior to Shabbos. Okay, we'll see what that means. Says the Gemara, Maitzinis. Remember, the Mishnah began. The Mishnah began by telling me that I can go out with a sela on the tzinis, right? I can go out with a coin on the tzinis, my tzinis. So the Gemara says, basara. We'll look at Rashi, basara. Mako shitachas parsas haregel, v'kosher basela l'refua. This is referring to a wound that I have on the heel of my foot, and people used to tie a coin onto the wound in order to heal the wound. So the Gemara says, maishna sela. Why a coin? Why are they using a coin to heal the wound? If it's just a question of that you need something that's hard in order to go ahead and put against the wound, because the idea is that essentially the coin will act as a buffer, that the wound should not become any worse as a result of walking on it. Say if it's just a question of having something hard to protect the wound, use a pottery shard. Right? Why do you have to use a coin? A coin has value. Use a pottery shard. Rather, it must be because of the shuchsa. What's shuchsa? Rashi says, lichluchis hayotze min hakesef. Maybe it's because of the moisture that comes from the silver. And I guess the Rashi is saying, and the Rashi says over here, that the moisture is beneficial for healing the wound itself. If that's the case, then it's because of moisture, le'ovid le'tasa, then why do you have to use a coin? You could just use any piece of silver. And that should be fine. Elam yishum tzurta. Rather, it must be because of the tzura. What does that mean, Rabbi Osai? The tzura represents a coin had an image. A coin had an image. Now, there's no question that... So, what does that mean? So, the way the Maharsha and the Rush understand this is that the tzurta represents the idea that there is this raised piece. So, it could be that the pressure from the raised image also went ahead and had some kind of benefit. Others understand that people thought that some of these images, for some reason, had some kind of medicinal value as well. But let's go with the first more rational explanation. Elimishum tzurta. So maybe it's because of the image on the coin. So the Gemara says, if that's the case, le'avid le'pulsa. Go ahead and make a pulsa. Pulsa is a piece of wood. It's a piece of wood. And you could go ahead and make an image on that. So therefore the Gemara says, Amar Abaye yishmamina kulu ma'alila. It must be that all three are what's necessary. You need something that's hard, you need something that has the moisture, and you need something that has the raised image. So because of that, people often used to go ahead and tie a coin onto the wound. Now, Rabbi Osai, of course, the interesting part about this is that what's happening over here, you're going ahead and you're using something under normal circumstances would be muktza. But because, again, remember, this also only works if you've put the coin on the wound when? Before Shabbos, right? Because the handle of the coin on Shabbos would be muktza. But assuming that you already did this before Shabbos, what you've essentially done is you've kind of negated its identity as a form of currency, as a coin, and now you're using it again to heal the wound, which then the Mishnah is saying, you're permitted to go out with this on Shabbos. The Hotsa issue, the Mishnah is ultimately not worried about. Why? Because it's tied on. It's tied on, because otherwise how else do you keep it on your foot? It's tied on, and a person's not going to come to take it off.
Does it conclude that it's really not for refuah, but it's more for tanug, because of the issue of refuah on Shabbos?
You put it on Friday.
Okay.
Any process that you began before Shabbos could continue on Shabbos. That's Rav Moshe's. So it's an interesting discussion about multi-day antibiotics. That's why some are matter multi-day antibiotics, because it's part of a ongoing refuah process that did not begin on Shabbos. All right, back to him. So the Gemara says the following: Abanos yotzos bechutim. The girls could go out with the strings in their ears. So avua deshmuel lo shavik luhu lebanse dinafki bechutim. So we'll say the Gemara over here discusses that the father of Shmuel did not allow certain practices with his daughters. So the father of Shmuel did not allow his girls to go out with the chutin, with the strings in their ears on Shabbos. Okay, what else did he not allow? V'lo shavik lo ganoin gabi hadadi. He did not want his girls to sleep next to each other. Rashi says, ganiin gabi hadadi, lishon zu eitzel zu ba'odan besulos. He did not want them sleeping in the same bed, right next to each other, while they were still unmarried. We're going to explain each of these things. He also made for them special mikvaos during Nisan. Look at Rashi for just a moment. Rashi says, "Lo shavik lo." Actually, no, it's not. I'm sorry. We'll see it later on in the Gemara. Umafzi, umafatzi biyomi Tishrei, and made for them mats for the river in Tishrei. That was a quick look at Rashi for just a moment. Mikvaos biyomi Nisan, shamayim michunasin. So during the month of Nisan, he did not want them immersing in the river itself, so instead he made them separate mikvos. So Rashi says whether that means that he just dug a hole and it filled with rainwater, or that he dug a hole and they channeled off river water, that was in Nisan. And in Tishrei, made for them mats for Tishrei, because in Tishrei they would go ahead and use the Euphrates River as a mikvah. And the problem was during Tishrei, the bottom of the river was very muddy. And so there was a concern that when a woman went in to be toveles, if her feet are in the mud, that could serve as a chatzitza for the tevila. So he made for them mats that they could stand on top of, so that when they went into the water, their feet would not get mired in the mud. So the Gemara will explain all of these things. So the Gemara says the following: V'ha'anan tenan habanos yotzos pechutin. Aye, but the Mishnah says that girls could go out with the strings in their ears on Shabbos. So why did the father of Shmuel not allow it? So the Gemara says ditziv onin havu, because they were colored strings. Meaning, apparently, the girls of Shmuel's father, which I guess are Shmuel's sisters, didn't just have plain strings; they had designer strings. Right, they had very pretty colored strings. So Rashi says there was a concern. Shmuel's father had a concern that because they were so pretty, the girls might take them out on Shabbos to show them to their friend. What about beforehand that we said that a girl wouldn't normally take them out because the hole's going to close up? So we know the hole's not going to close up if she takes it out for 2 minutes and shows it to her friend. So because they wore these pretty colored threads, Shmuel's father did not want them going out with it on Shabbos. Next. Lo shavik lehu gino en gabi hadadi. So he did not let his daughters sleep together, like bikiruv basar, like touching, like right next to each other in the same bed before they were married. So the Gemara says, lema mesele de Rav Huna. This comes to support Rav Huna. What Rav Huna? The Amr Rav Huna. Nashim hamesololos zubazu. So Rashi, so the Gemara says, so Rav Huna says, Nashim hamesololos, look at the last Rashi, mesololos mitachachos mishum tavas tashmish. It's essentially talking about women who engage in lesbian activity. Right? Misas literally means rub each other. So women who engage in this type of sexual behavior with one another. So psulos lekohuna. Ultimately, they are puzzled to marry kohanim. Now I will say, here's what's interesting. Remember, technically speaking, lesbian activity is not osir midoraisa. It's not osir midoraisa. It's not biblically prohibited. Because the only thing that's biblically prohibited is gay activity, homosexual activity, because Torah speaks about Mishkav Zohar. Mishkav Zohar, because again, in the case of homosexual activity, there is a real act of intercourse that could occur, and there's also Shechva Zera. So, but when it comes to female activity like this, technically speaking, there's not an Isser De'oraisa. Rav Huna, however, holds that a woman who engages in this type of activity is Pasul L'Kahuna. Now why? Now take a look at Rashi. Rashi says over here that Pasul L'Kahuna is the Kohen Gadol. He's talking about the Kohen Gadol. Rashi says, Delo Havya Bisula Shalema. Why? Because a girl who engages in this type of lesbian activity is not considered to be a full Besula. Even though, again, remember, her Besulim may actually be intact, but after engaging in this type of sexual activity with another woman, she's not considered to be a Besula Shalema. Now, again, that's interesting over here, is this is a new designation, because you kind of thought that you either are or you're not, right? It's kind of, you know, it's hard to be on the fence with being a Besula or not, but apparently, according to Rashi, there is this notion of a Besula Shalema. Not for a regular Kohen. For a regular Kohen, should be totally fine. But for the Kohen Gadol, he needs a complete Besula, and this woman will not satisfy the criteria. Now, Rashi points out over here, the Avagav, the Kohen Gadol, biomei lohava. Now, remember, the father of Shmuel is already living after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. See, even though there is no Kohen Gadol, nevertheless, hoil v'derech snus chashiv lei lav orach ara. But nevertheless, what Shmuel's father felt is, the fact, I'm not worried about my daughter not being able to marry a Kohen Gadol, because at the end of the day, there is no Kohen Gadol. But nevertheless, the fact that a woman would not be able to marry a Kohen Gadol after engaging in this type of activity indicates that this is inappropriate. Therefore, again, he wanted his daughters to sleep separately. Now, I'll just point out very quickly, Tosas points out, the top Tosas, Psulos the Kahuna. So, First he quotes Rashi, and then if you look 3 lines down, he says, V'yesh mefarshim mishum zona upsulos afla kohen hedjot. Tosis seals that no, the psul over here would not just be for a kohen gadol, but would even be for a kohen hedjot. Would even be for a regular Kohen. Why? Because according to Tosis, a girl who engages in this type of lesbian activity would be classified as a zona. And a zona is prohibited to go ahead and marry even a regular Kohen. All right, so just an interesting machlokis Rashi Tosis about this particular situation. So the Gemara says, lo, That's not the reason for Shmuel's father's behavior. That's not the reason why he told his girls to sleep separately. Rather, why did he tell them this? Ki hechi delo laifan gufa nuchra. So the Gemara says, no, he had a different concern. He had a concern that they should not become accustomed to sleeping next to another body. Why, Rashi says, v'yisavu lishkav im ish. Because then they will desire to be a man, to sleep with a man. In other words, what Shmuel's father was concerned about is if they become habituated with always sleeping with another body in the bed, they'll crave that. And ultimately, you know, I guess if the sister's not there anymore, they may desire to have that closeness with the man, which of course is fine once they got married, but he was concerned that it would set them up on a path of immoral activity. Therefore, he told his girls to sleep separately. And he made for them a separate mikvah during the days of Nisan. So the Gemara says, Misayeli l'rav. So why? So meaning he didn't want them to use the river during Nisan. So why not? So the Gemara says the following, Misayeli l'rav. Do'amar Rav, Mitra b'ma'arav. I'll listen to this. When Rav said, when it rains in Eretz Yisrael, Sada Rabba Pras. If you ever want to know what the rainfall situation is in Eretz Yisrael, the greatest witness to the rainfall in Eretz Yisrael is the Euphrates River. Why, remember, the Euphrates ran all the way from Eretz Yisrael all the way to Bavel. So when the Euphrates River became very swollen, they knew in Bavel that it was raining in Eretz Yisrael. Savar, so listen to this. So what happens? So Nisan really is the conclusion, towards the conclusion of the rainy season. So what Shmuel's father was concerned about the following. Savar, shelo yirbu hanotfim al hazochalin. Shmuel's father was concerned that the notfin, the rainwater, will go ahead and be more than the flowing water. What's the concern? The concern is like this, Rabosai, that at Nisan, when the river is swollen, it could be that there's more rainwater in the river than original river water. So you'll say, who cares? This is very important, who cares in this. The halacha is the following. For rainwater to be used as a mikvah, it has to be michulasin. It has to be gathered. Meaning it has to be standing water. Flowing rainwater cannot be used as a mikvah. River water, however, can be used as a mikvah even if it's flowing. Shmuel's father had a concern that at the end of Nisan, or during Nisan, when after the rainy season, maybe the Euphrates was comprised of more rainwater than we'll call river water. And because of that, it would end up being flowing rainwater, and therefore, halacha lemaisa, it would not be usable for a mikvah. So that's what Rashi points out over here. In Nisan, he would make separate mikvahs. It's not as complicated as it sounds. If you think about it, according to the second approach in Rashi, he would dig a hole away from the river and channel just some of the water into that. So this way, he has a bar, he has a pit of standing water that they can go ahead and immerse in. So he says, Sovershal Yirbu Anotazol, Upliga de Shmuel. But this argues on Shmuel. Because what does Shmuel say? Nahara Mikifei Mivrach. Shmuel is of the opinion, look at Rashi, Mikifei Mivrach. I don't think you mean you can look at that Rashi that I just, the Rashi of Savar, Shema, Yerbu, Notfim, is ultimately what we just said outside. But Rashi goes into a little bit more depth, explaining how we know that, again, only rainwater is only good if it's standing, versus river water that's good even when it's running, when it's flowing. So this seems to argue on Shmuel, because what does Shmuel say? Nara Mikifei Mivrach. Look at Rashi, Mikifei Mivrach. Misvasa umim koro umisalo silimitermi yifat. Kifa, excuse me. So Shmuel holds that river water really comes from springs. That the majority of water in the river comes from its springs. And even during the rainy season, Shmuel always holds that a river is always going to be good for tevila, is always going to be good for immersion purposes, because we always assume that the majority of water that's in the river is what? Is river water and not rainwater. There's a whole other discussion also that once rainwater falls in, at what point does it become bottle? Right? How long do we say that it always retains its identity as rainwater the entire time? It ultimately becomes river water. Okay, not for now. So the Gemara says the following. And in reality, Shmuel actually contradicts himself. The Amar Shmuel, Ein Hamayim Mitarin Bezochalin, because Shmuel has said that river water only works, it's only considered to be flowing water, in the Euphrates in Tishrei. which was seen in the country that we said before, because Tishrei, remember, Tishrei is already way after the rainy season. It's a month before. It's actually right before the rainy season actually begins. So you have another statement of Shmuel that says that you can only really use the Euphrates River as a mikvah in Tishrei. So the Gemara points out, Shmuel himself seems to contradict himself. Does the Euphrates always have the status of river water? Or do we say that, no, it's only after the rainy season that we can assume it's river water and not rainwater? But either way, the point that you must remember why we introduced this whole discussion. The reason we introduced this discussion is because of the threads in the ear. Right? The Mishnah said that a young girl could go out with the threads in her ear to keep the holes for the earrings open. The Gemara just points out that the father of Shmuel did not allow this because, again, his daughter wore the like the Feinschmecker threads, you know, mamish, nice and fancy, and so that they couldn't go out there. And then once the Gemara brought that up, so the Gemara brought up the other cases also where Shmuel had these interesting behaviors. Okay, weiter, says the Gemara. Porefes ala Evan. So remember the Mishnah said that you can go ahead and you could use as a button for tying the cloak, for tying the straps of the cloak, you porefes ala Evan, egos matea, you could use a nut or a stone or a coin as the button. Now I will say the Mishnah ends off by saying Ubilvad Shotifrof Lachatchila b'Shabbos. But this is all assuming what? That you don't go ahead and do this lechatchila on Shabbos. So the Gemara says like this. The Gemara says, v'ha'amrit resha porefes. But the Gemara says, you're contradicting yourself. Right? Why? Because what did the Gemara say originally? The Gemara made it sound like that you can go ahead and use this button for the first time on Shabbos. So we'll say, obviously, you can't attach the button to your cloak on Shabbos. That's a different issue of kosher. But the Mishnah at first made it sound like, let's say I've never used this button before. I've never used it before. So the Mishnah made it sound like I could use it for the first time on Shabbos. But then the Mishnah ends off by saying, yes, you could use anything you want for a button, but you must have inaugurated the button for use, meaning actually used it prior to Shabbos. So the Gemara says, which one is it? To which the Gemara says the following. Look at Rashi just a moment. V'ha'am rit reisha porefes, v'ahi v'ada lechatchila karm b'Shabbos, d'imi ba'od yom v'ashinu yosebo b'Shabbos, hotan reisha midios porfos. So therefore the Gemara says like this. The Gemara says, Amar Abaye, seifa ason lematbeya. Oh. What is the last case the Mishnah talking about? It's talking about a coin. Dafka, the case in which you use a coin for a button. Rashi says, Asal matbea, delav bar tiltulhu, aval even shehiktsa lekach roi letiltul. So Moshe, listen to this. So the Gemara says, the last statement of the Mishnah is coming to teach us specifically about the case of a coin. That if you go ahead and you use a coin as a button, you can go ahead and do that, but what must you do before Shabbos? You must have used it as a button before Shabbos. Simple designation of the coin as a button is not enough. You must have actively used it as a button before Shabbos, and then you could go ahead and use it on Shabbos. Anything else could simply be designated as a button. The act of tying it onto the clothing is enough to designate it as a button. And even if you didn't use it, you could use the chatchila on Shabbos. But a coin which has a dramatically different identity, to simply designate it as a button, even just to attach it as a button is not enough. You must actively use it before Shabbos as a button. And if you don't, you would not be permitted to use that for the first time on Shabbos. So the Gemara goes weiter. Isha, boy abai, I've asked the following question. Isha ma'ushet tarim v'tifrof ala egos lahotzi libna katan b'Shabbos. So the Gemara says, an interesting case. Could a woman employ a subterfuge to go ahead and take a nut out to her child on Shabbos? What does the Yibbol say? Let's say my child, right? My child is in the Rosh Hashanah, and my kid wants a snack. Wants a snack. Wants a nut. So obviously, I can't carry the nut from the house to the Rosh Hashanah. So can I go ahead and essentially put on my cloak, right, and wear my cloak out to the Rosh Hashanah? And once I get out to the Rosh Hashanah, go ahead and give my child the nut. Right? However, I'm going to get it off the cloak, assuming the Vazdo is a Shabbos. Now, again, it's clear my intention is only to give my kid the nut. Right? I don't really need to wear the article of clothing right now. Right? But I want to get. So am I allowed the Chatchila to go ahead and do this on Shabbos, knowing that the only reason I'm wearing the nut out, I'm using the nut button, is to get the nut to my kid?
So would that be the same case as people used to make a tie clip out of a house key?
Pretty much. Pretty much, although in that case, at no point in time are you actively taking it off in the Rosh Hashanah. Right? In this case, I'm wearing it out to Rosh Hashanah, I'm going to give it to my kid, Rosh Hashanah, I'm not wearing it back. The tie clip is a little bit easier, you're wearing it. you're wearing it the only time you're taking it off is when you get to your house and you're going to unlock your door.
Right,
the question is, the child can be fed. No, but the case of it is, it's in
Rosh Hashanah. But you have to go through the Rosh Hashanah to get there.
No, but that's not this case. That's not this case. This is, again, you can see explicitly. So Rashi says over here, Rashi points out that it's in Rosh, the kid is in Rosh Hashanah. In Achinami. You can If she's going to another Rosh Hashanah, that's even easier. Here we want to know she's taking it out of Rosh Hashanah, she wants to give it to her kid in Rosh Hashanah, could she do that? So the Gemara says the following. So also, remember, we have this case of using this harama in another situation as well. Where does it come up? Rashi points out it comes up in the case of the dleika. It comes up in the case of the fire. So, for example, the Gemara quotes a machlok. If you look at Rashi, Rashi says the following: Tiboy leman domer. So Rashi says over here, plukta v'chol kisvei kodesh. We'll get this machlok a little bit later on. Lovesh komash yochal lilbosh. Divrei Rabbi Meir. Va'afila asar chalukim ze al ze. Rabbi Yosi omer shmona asar kelim kederech shu lovesh b'chol. So the interesting machlok from Rabbi Yosi about if there's a fire in my house, can I go ahead and put on multiple layers of clothing in order to save the clothing or not? So Rabbi Meir holds that I can. I can put on as much as I want. I could put on 50 layers of clothing, even though no one ever dresses this way. And I could put it all on, and it's all called clothing, and I can save my clothing like that. Rabbi Yossi, on the other hand, holds that, no, you could only wear, he calls it the 18 things that a person normally wears, and nothing more. Nothing more. So the Gemara says like this, Tiboy lemandar ma'arimin, Tiboy lemandar in ma'arimin. So this question is a good kasha, both according to Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yossi. Why, says the Gemara? Because let's ask, according to Rabbi Meir, who allows me to put on multiple layers of clothing, even though I will say it's clear that what? I'm not wearing that clothing for any other reason other than saving it from the fire. That's harama. So bidleika, So maybe you'll say, the only reason Rabbi Meir says that you can do that by the case of the fire is because there's a concern that if we don't let you do this by the case of the fire, what'll happen? You'll come to extinguish the fire, right? A person is very, very, when it comes to saving your property, so a person sometimes does drastic things. So Chazal will concern that if we don't let you go ahead and wear all this clothing out, even though it's ridiculous and it's not real, you're not really wearing it, but we'd rather let you do that than run the risk of having you put out the fire, which could be an Isra De'oraisa, Abal Hocha, Ilo Sharisle, Lo Asi La'afuke. But over here, no matter how much my kid likes nuts, right, I'm not going to come to actually carry the nut from a Rosh Sayacha to Rosh Saram. So because there's no concern that a person may violate a more intense Avera, maybe we should not let her wear the nut out on the cloak. O Dilma, on the other hand, you can say the following. O Dilma, afilu lemando amra in ma'arim bidleika, hasam derech hotza bekach. So on the other hand, you could say that maybe, why does Rabbi Meir hold, why does Rabbi Yossi hold, that you could only wear the 18 utensils and nothing, the 18 pieces of clothing and nothing more? Why does Rabbi Yossi hold that you can't keep putting on layers of clothing? Because that's derech hotza. Because it's not true. There were people who wore clothing like that. Who wear clothing like that? It's actually interesting. Clothing merchants. Right? Clothing merchants. How would they go ahead and transport and often sell their wares? You need an extra large? No problem. Right, you take it up. Right, you take it up. That's how they would wear their clothing. So because that's how they would wear their clothing, that's why Rabbi Yossi holds, that's called derech hotza. And therefore, no, we will not let you do that on Shabbos, but even to say, because that's a formal act of hotza. However, but over here, this is not a way that people transport nuts. Right? People don't transport clothing by tying it onto their clothing. And therefore, perhaps over here, it should be mutter. Therefore, the Gemara says, maybe you should be prohibited. Gemara says, teku. Therefore, again, the Gemara doesn't resolve this particular issue. Because again, this machlokas, you could see it in both ways. Gemara both say, obviously, in any cases of teku, where the Gemara ends up as a teku, the default position is luchumra. The default position is that we would not allow this on Shabbos. But of course, again, if a woman did end up doing this on Shabbos, we also would not classify it as a normal act of chotzah. All right, sure.